1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Medium Talk, the premium interview podcast of the Black Guy Who Tips Network. I'm your host, Rod. As always, I talk to different interesting people that I find interesting. You know, it's really not about you guys. It's about what I feel like doing. And today is no exception. This is a person that I've gone with for quite a while on Twitter. And I've always found her tweets to be interesting. And I always was like, man, she knows so much stuff about things that I don't know about. And I was like, I should have her on so we can talk about it. You guys may see me, if you follow me on Twitter, Ryder and Sprite, you may see me communicating with her from time to time. You may see her live tweeting with me with Catfish, for all my people that follow Rod live tweets. But it's Monica, aka Monica is Liberal, from Twitter. What's going on, Monica?
Hey, Rod, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Just enjoying this Texas heat at 10 o'clock in the morning, which is vicious right now. Vicious.
How high is it in Texas right now?
Right now, let's see. Let me check my little handy dandy weather app. But it was, I think, almost already 100.
What? At 10 in the morning?
Yeah, it's. Oh, you know what? And I'm lying. It's 92.
You know
but
what?
It feels like it's 105.
That is like the peak temperature here in North Carolina.
Jealous. I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
Yesterday it was, I think, 105.
Wow.
But we've had a pretty good summer so far. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, that's the thing. We've had a pretty mild summer this year too. But it means like most of the time we peak at like 80 something, which is like the perfect weather right now. I couldn't even imagine if it was like 100 degrees at like noon, you know?
That's why I get stabby on Twitter. Cause it's like, if you follow me and it comes around 1 o'clock, that's when it's at its peak, heat level. And I work on the road, which means I'm in and out of my car all day. And so I'm already angry, pissy, and just like, I could throat chop people cause it's hot and Texans get really angry come August. So
yeah, that means where you're at, if your AC stops working in your car, that's like a work emergency and it has to be fixed right away.
Oh yeah. I mean, in fact, right now my home AC, I've got to get serviced because I got my last electric bill and I was like, I don't live in a mansion. I live in just a, you know, normal single family home. And it was like $400.
Whoa.
And I was like, yo, that's half my mortgage.
Yeah. Oh my God. Wow.
So I was like, you can't have your AC go out in Texas. That's when you pack your stuff and go stay at your mama's house. Cause it's like, this is, you know, this is not going to stand. So, but yeah, so that's how it is here. But, you know, we've got a lot of really crazy stuff going on in Texas right now. So,
well,
the heat just added to it.
One of the things I noticed about you from following you on Twitter is that you appear to be a big Lawrence O'Donnell fan.
Oh, yes. It's very well known that he's my white boo.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he's the same age as my mom, by the way, and I don't care. And I have no shame. I mean, I just put it out there and he knows it. My boyfriend knows it. I'll be like, yo, he's on my list. And he's totally just really weirded out by the fact that I have the hots for him. But I tell him that my obsession with Lawrence O'Donnell actually started 15 plus years ago. Believe it or not, people think that I just started fangirling over him since he was on, you know, his show. But I've been watching MSNBC since 96. Mm. And then when I found out he was a writer and producer of my favorite show, which is The West Wing, it was just like it was meant to be. But, you know, I have to compete with another Texas girl, and that's Tamron Hall. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if that's the official thing, but – you know, I like that he likes a little flavor. But, you know, Tamron Hall is a little thin sister. Mm. And I'm like, you need, you know, a woman.
Right.
I'm just saying, I'm putting it out there. So if I may actually send him a link to this podcast and say, you need to hear me talking about you.
Yeah.
To complete and absolute strangers. I'm not a strange, crazy stalker. Just maybe a little bit. I mean, people give me hell. And I think sometimes people don't get satire or when you're being, you know, that's just how I am. I have that kind of sense of humor, which is why you and I connect really well. Because we don't take anything too seriously.
Yeah.
And the stuff that we do talk about that we care about will be serious, but most of the time, you know, a good 60% about what I talk about is I'm talking shit. And, Lawrence is one of my things that I like to focus on, and I prefer if people don't give me hell about it. But, you know, we all have our little weird crushes, and he just happens to be one of mine.
Well, look, man, you never know. He might want to come get up on them curves, so you got to always give him a chance.
Hey, I put it out there.
You know? You know? He'll never – what is squeaky wheel gets the grease, man? Like, he'll never know if you don't say.
I'm saying, you know, and he and you know what's funny is the people that follow him, that I've had – people send me messages or tweet that are like, why are you the only person that he talks to? And I was like, that kind of weirded me out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I'm actually not. But so then I looked through and I was like, well, I guess for a little while there. And I was, so then it's like the whole, he's, you know, got a, you know, Twitter's such a strange, strange thing.
It is.
And the fact that people actually pay attention to that is, I think, hilarious.
It is, man. Like, now, is it a more of a crush because he's spitting the hot fire truth that you agree with and you like, yes, get him, Lawrence. Okay.
Let me tell you. I mean, I have a running joke and I tell my friends this, like, if you line up all the guys that I've dated in my lifetime, there's no one consistent look about them. But one thing for the most part is a good sense of humor, someone who has no problem telling the truth. And you know, an educated person, if you will. And I don't mean educated by like, I went to college and I got a degree.
Right.
I mean that I'm self-taught and I read books and I know what's going on in the world. You know, I mean, I almost married someone who was none of those things. And obviously I didn't marry that person, but someone who can talk about world events and can just, he's no holds bar, which I like about him, but he's also very pragmatic.
Right.
And I think that sometimes when you're dealing with politics or anything, you know, with society, it's a black, everyone wants it to be a black or white situation.
Yes.
And that's not the world that we live in. And sometimes you need to be pragmatic. Sometimes you need to call out to a degree your own side.
Yeah.
But it's got to make sense, which is what he does.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, for the most part, I like the lineup at nighttime on MSNBC.
Yeah.
You know, I like Rachel Maddow. I like Chris Hayes. But Lawrence, because, you know, he's at the 10 o'clock time slot, he can just get kind of buck wild with stuff. So I'm like, preach.
Little less censorship, a little more, rawness. Yeah, I definitely understand that. And like you said, man, so much in politics is seen as black and white now, or our side and their side. And there's every single topic has these like nuances and shades of gray. And, like I'm kind of, apolitical because I end up in situations where I'm like, well, if you think about it, I could see it from this perspective. And then it's like, you can't voice that. It's like, all right, well, I don't want to be with you guys. I would like to just, have my own opinion at this point. At the end of the day, like, I still end up voting Democrat most of the time because, like, the other side is just so crazy where I'm like, well, I definitely don't agree with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I end up watching MSNBC if I do watch the news or when I watch the news, because it's like the reasonable alternative. Like, like, it's not even about agreeing with everything on there. It's really just like, well, I could go watch Fox, which is like crazy. Or CNN, which I think is like extremely lazy at this point. And then you have MSNBC where you're like, oh, these people actually read and did the research. I think I'll listen to them.
You know, it's like, when you watch Maddow, and specifically Maddow, Chris Hayes, and like, Steve Kornacki, they obviously do a lot of research about what they talk about. Even though they're an opinion-based show, there's facts behind it.
Right.
And one of the favorite things I like to say when it comes to politics is emotions are not facts.
Right.
You can feel however, I know I can feel however I want to about a situation, but that doesn't necessarily make it true.
Right.
So, and I always like to ask myself, if there was an R behind this politician's name, would I still feel the same about what they're talking about? Or am I just giving them a pass because they're a Democrat?
Yeah. That happens a lot, you know, like I think that happens a lot where, because also like the way our political system is set up, it's kind of like, well, take the best choice of two choices that aren't really a good fit for you. So most of the time, you're not going to find any politician that you agree with wholeheartedly on anything, right? And then the way the system is set up, it's, well, you're gonna have to come down to like picking one of two parties more than likely. Yeah. Every once in a while there's a third party, but like with the third party being a tea party now, it's still one of two parties for me. So you end up in these situations where you're like, well, hopefully they come around, or, you know, if we can like kind of put their feet to the fire on this issue, they'll see my point. But there's really no good, like, oh, I agree with everything that comes out that dude's mouth. High five. You know, like, that's just not our system.
And it's just completely unrealistic. Because you can't even find a person, a single person as a friend that you get along with everything that they say.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, I'm in marketing. I've been in marketing for, you know, 16 plus years. So I always take an advertising approach to life. And I know that it really gets under people's skin, but I say everything in life is a three-prong approach. If you can't tell me what you need or you want in three talking points, then I'm probably going to kind of move on. And that's how I tell people to approach almost politics when they tell me, well, I don't know anything about politics and that's why I don't get involved. I say, write down on a piece of paper three things you care about. And then when you write those down, I can tell you where that feeds in. And you may not decide that you want to be a Democrat.
Right.
You may be in line with being a Republican, and that's fine for me. As long as you're politically engaged and you vote, that's really all I care about.
Right.
But it's three points. I tell people, you know, me, it's, you know, healthcare, women's healthcare issues, you know, things like that. You talk those three down, and then you can say, okay, well, does that work for me with a Democrat? Or does that, you know, I think a woman has a right, should have a right to choose, and I think everyone should have access to healthcare. I think education should be affordable. You know, I'm for same-sex marriage. There's a whole lot of things that fall under what I believe in that goes with the Democratic Party, and that's just because it's a big tent party. But it's not perfect.
Right. Obviously, you know, not.
Not at all. Yeah. And I think that where we're at right now is there are the people that will hate every single thing that the president says, no matter what he says. But then there are also the people on our side that will agree with every single thing that the president says, that it's like, no matter what, he's right.
Yeah.
That's where I think there's a problem with today's political system. And social media has played into that. Everyone has an opinion, and you want to be part of, I call it the cool crowd, to say, yeah, you know, I agree with this and that. And that doesn't help us in the long run.
Right.
You have to, during a campaigning process and during general election, it's our job to get the person elected that we believe in. Once they've been elected, it's your job as a citizen to hold that politician accountable for the things that they promised during the campaign. And I don't have a problem with people doing that. I don't have a problem with people telling the president, you know, just like when on same-sex marriage, you know, the LGBT community worked really hard along with many other groups to get him elected. So I have no problem with them saying, you know, you need to come out and support us in the way that we supported you. And people were chastised for doing that. But, you know, the way I look at it is, if it would have been Hillary Clinton that would have gotten the nomination, I wonder if she would have been given a lot of passes.
I'm gonna say no, she wouldn't. You know what's funny is, you know, he came around because of that pressure. Like, it wasn't like he came into office and was like, I mean, he was hiding behind the same excuse that, you know, a lot of people use that are just straight up bigots, where it's like, well, my religion says this. And he was making like what I call the Democratic compromise, which is like, well, I believe that, you know, the government can recognize those things, but I mean, I'm not going to tell your church what to do. And he finally kind of came around and like, no, they should be able to get married federally. We should acknowledge that. It should just be a state thing. And it is because of that pressure. It took four or five years, but still the pressure worked. And you're right. If there's no one pushing the needle to be like, hey, here's another issue where we think that you can improve on, or we think that you're out of line with us, or we think that you, you know, there's a significant voting block, here. I think that they do have a responsibility to at least make their arguments known. And, you know, I will say this about Obama. I think people get more defensive of him because there's the racial element of it.
Yeah.
And not even just from like, oh, there's these racist people, but there's like black people that don't like Obama because he's black. Like, where they're just like, how come he ain't come to my neighborhood and stop the crimes, you know, stop the bullets with his own fist? And people get so involved on social media, like
it's
you said.
It's an emotional response.
It's exact. People are just so like, don't talk about him. And then the other people are like, I'm going to take him down. And there's this like huge like fight all the time on everything he says. And it's like, I think people just rather, they just line up with sides rather than issues.
It's like this. It's like me coming out and kicking a door down and saying, you know, Dallas Cowboys, you know, it's like sports. It's not, it's not like that. What's real interesting for me is I've grown a lot. I mean, I just turned 38. I've been politically active since I was in high school. During the first Bush administration, I was rabid. I was a rabid liberal. Like, I mean, I gave my mom my old car and she still has the anti-W sticker on it, because that was a part of like, if I'm going to give you my car and you're not paying me for it, you got to keep the sticker on it.
Right.
So I was pretty rabid, and with age comes maturity and looking at things more pragmatically. My boyfriend is African-American. He's Muslim. And when we got together, he voted for Bush. Well, he was a Bush voter, and I was obviously a Democrat.
Right.
And I don't even know how we winded up hooking up, to be honest with you. That's why I tell him, I was like, your game must have been good. But I told him, I was like, you know, if we're going to make this serious, you're going to have to become a Democrat at some point. And he did vote for Barack Obama, but, you know, he was not registered with any party. What that brought to me was talking to someone who was an issues-based kind of voter. And he's a gun owner, and there were certain things, you know, didn't like the Clintons. You know, he's from Newark, so he has a different kind of perspective on things than I do from Texas. But he told me, you know, politics isn't sports. He goes, that's what kills me about a lot of people aligned to a political party is it's, right. you know, rah-rah. And, you know, he's the one who told me emotions aren't facts. So it really made me kind of step back and look at things a little bit better and say, okay, is this, am I saying this just because I support this person?
Right.
I didn't support everything Bill Clinton did, obviously. I didn't stand for everything that John Kerry would. In fact, John Edwards was my preferred candidate, and well, we know what happened with him. But
by the way, John Edwards is one of the most tragic stories in politics because that dude had like, he really had the interest of the poor and working class in mind. And like, the fact that his campaign was basically derailed by infidelity, which so many politicians have overcome, is really sad. And then also, like, so many people just, were in their personal life, and we don't know these people. Like, we just know the platform they present to us, but like, technically, I don't know what kind of marriage they had. I don't know what kind of arrangement they had. What I do know is politically he was presenting something, and he just kind of got ate by the process. And unfortunately, like, him being like completely like discredited hurt, the Democratic side so bad, because neither politician, neither Clinton or Barack Obama, really picked up that platform where it's, if he would have been a viable candidate, I think he would have had to join in with one of the other and become somebody in an advisory capacity that actually would have, spoken about so many class issues that we don't really get right now.
You know, I thought that he was actually going to be his attorney general before all this happened. And John Edwards talked, his platform had always been about the two Americas and speaking about poverty, and specifically speaking about veterans that live in dire poverty. It's one of the things that, you know, I'm working on right now on a charitable side is the amount of men and women that are coming back from deployment that live at poverty standards, making $18,000 a year. But nobody wants to talk about that. You want to wave your flag. You want to put your yellow ribbon on your tree or sticker on your car. And that's about it. Well, there's more to it. And he brought that to light. Was he a narcissist? Absolutely. You have to be a narcissist to be in politics.
Yeah.
I've yet to meet someone that doesn't. You have to believe in yourself to a certain degree to get into politics. That's just the nature of it. You
need
someone
who's
confident. Yeah.
It was weird because people were mad at him for being pretty, which is like one of the like weirdest things, because we demand our politicians to be pretty. Like, you know, like there's like, I remember when it was McCain versus Obama, and I was like, and people were like, people were so worried. I was like, he will not win because he's not the coolest candidate. The coolest candidate.
Well, he had, and he had T-Rex
wins.
Arms. So
yeah.
Like, when he was trying to wave, it was like his, it's just,
he looks
the one
like,
thing that I'll tell everyone to go back to is look at the very first televised presidential debate, and that was between Nixon and Kennedy. And Nixon is sweating, And because he was loony, by the way, we all know now.
Yeah.
But he was sweating and this and that. And you can't go up against a Kennedy.
Yeah. And
I mean, they're the coolest mofos,
In America, the coolest candidate always wins. Like, even when it was Bush, Bush just looked cooler than Gore. So it was just like, people were like, you know what? I think I gotta go with this dude.
Well, it's like, this is how jacked up we are as a people. It's like, I could have a beer with Bush. I don't want to have a beer with the president.
Me neither. Yeah.
I'm voting for him because he should be smarter than I am.
Right.
And I had a calendar on my desk of the 365 days of Bushisms, and he was the governor of my state. Mm-hmm. He has Mexican relatives, and he said there was one, and I'm, this is not verbatim, but he's like, I don't speak French or Mexican. I was like, what? I'm like, yo, it's Spanish and you're from Texas.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to burn everything down. But that's where I was at.
But that is like, yeah, and that works. That is exactly where America is at. So like, it's the same reason people don't think Chris Christie's ever going to be president, because he's fat, you know, and there's like this idea of like, well, we can't be voting for him, even if you like his ideas or even if you agree with something. It's like, the eye test is everything, and to see people like try to flip it onto John Edwards, like, oh, this motherfucker care about his hair. It's like, of course he cares about his hair. If his hair was
part of, he's a trial lawyer. He would get up in front of, talk to people. You know, what they did, it wasn't that he cared about his look. They tried to make him seem effeminate.
Right.
And by doing that, made him seem like he was less of a man.
Right.
Which is shameful that happened, because if you look at the Bushes and you look at these Republicans, you know, I guarantee you they're living in big houses. I guarantee you they care about their image. You think that someone like Ted Cruz is wearing cowboy boots because he's a cowboy? It's such bullshit. They have stylists. They do all of this stuff. So I hate when the right tries to come at that, because I'm like, you know, you wear camo because you think it makes you look manly. So what's the difference between you wearing camo and someone caring about how their hair looks?
Yeah, it's all an image. Right. All the politicians are backstage getting makeup. All of them are going out taking photo ops with guns and, like you said, camouflage and stuff. It's just such a double standard. And then to throw it on him, like I said, was already kind of a like weird angle to attack him. And then, to discredit, you know, for him to be discredited totally. Like, I don't even know what he like does now, but you would think someone as magnetic as him, you would think like someone like that would be on our TVs or, you know.
When you think about the double standard, I'll take it even a step further. Someone like Newt Gingrich, who's had three wives and cheated on one while she was dying of cancer. Right. Whereas someone like John Edwards did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Democrats hold Democrats to different standards, whereas Republicans won't.
That's true.
Now, granted, you know, he got another woman pregnant while his wife was dying of breast cancer.
Right.
I mean, I was livid at that. And the reason why I was livid at it is not because I felt like what was going on in his personal life was any of my business. It was that, you know, how much your platform is needed, and you let, for lack of better words, you let a piece of ass get in the way.
High five.
And you make a conscious choice when you put yourself in the public spotlight, that you've given up all privacy. That's just the world we live in, especially now. And I was like, you're going to lose it all for that?
Yeah, that's the thing that I get more upset about, is the frivolousness of the people involved. Because you're just like, well, you now realize that anything good you did is done. Like, because society does have these puritanical rules and guidelines, and you do play to these guidelines when you're running. Yeah. So the second people find out, oh, you're a big phony, like, they throw everything out. And there hasn't been a politician yet that has stepped into back into that same lane that he was in, where, you know, they were getting national attention for a class platform. So it's kind of sad. All right, let's get back to you, though.
Okay,
all right.
Sorry.
It's cool. This is pretty much what happens on the show.
That's what makes it good.
How long have you been politically active?
I'm going to say since high school. Mm. Before then, I grew up in a household. My dad's a union guy. He was a union committeeman with the IAM. So I was raised in a Democratic household. He was the child of two union workers. So we grew up in a my dad was more politically involved. My mom, not at all. But I mean, I remember learning about Ann Richards, and, you know, I remember when Dukakis ran, we were at Dukakis' house, you know, in 88, I was 12, I think it was. But I found out I was like a feminist. Like, I was a little bit more left than my dad, probably my eighth grade year. So when I started high school, I was like in the, you know, Young Democrats and stuff like that, which I went to the school in the hood. So, you know, we didn't get a whole lot of people involved in that. But I followed the election between Bush and Clinton, and I had an uncle that went to a Desert Storm. So I started to care a little bit more about what was happening in, you know, international policy and things like that. But mainly I was a Democrat because my dad was a Democrat. That's how I was raised. My mom was a Christian. I'm not a Christian. Mm-hmm. So I sided with my dad on a lot of stuff. You know, I believed in certain social services and things like that. And mainly, I mean, I would be lying if I said my dad didn't tell me that the Republican Party didn't have my best interest at heart. We're Mexican, you know, but I'm a Mexican who doesn't speak Spanish, and I'm, you know, third, fourth generation. So, you know, but they all look at us the same as what my dad would tell me.
Right.
And he's a union guy. So Republicans were always about, Reagan was the president that wanted to bust up unions. So after that, it was, you know, donezo. They got made to look like they were all Teamsters, which wasn't the case. Mm-hmm. So high school, I just really got involved and looked at the different platforms, and I liked Bill Clinton. And for the reasons why we're talking about why people liked Bush.
Right.
People liked Clinton because he was a bubba from Arkansas.
Well, he has that same, that charisma, dog. Like, you, it doesn't take, it takes a lot to get elected, obviously. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it is going to come down to like who people feel more comfortable with and who gets people motivated to vote. And it's like, unfortunately, I don't even think it's policies or platforms for a lot of this stuff. When you get down to two decisions, it's just who's going to make people get out of their house, go wait in a hot ass line, and go inside a library and pull a lever. And it pretty much comes down to whoever looks the coolest. And that was Clinton,
well,
man.
I will say this about Clinton. And, you know, people love to tear them down. But the 2012 election, there was a moment where I was like, oh, shit. We may not pull this off. And then the convention happened. And Billy Clinton came out and talked about the economy in the way that and it's something that the Democratic Party struggles with, is it's a lot of academia. You know, a lot of people very smart like President Obama who can speak on an inspirational level. But when it comes to actually talking through policy, I do public speaking partly for a living. So I'll be listening to him and I'm like, dude, you lost me. I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. Yeah. And I'm pretty well versed on stuff. But then Clinton comes out and it's like, oh, shit, 1 + 1 = 2. It just made sense. And he single-handedly helped push that election a little further, I think, and talking to people who were a little uneasy about stuff. Even if you knew it wasn't all President Obama's fault that things were going the way they were,
right,
you just needed it to be explained to you on a level. And people who are in the vortex, I call it, of politics, forget that there are so many millions of Americans that get up every day, go to work, raise their kids, trying to pay their bills. They don't live and breathe the Twitter sphere. They don't live and breathe politics. So those are the people that we need to talk to every day.
Yeah.
So that's where Bill Clinton was good. And, you know, I was 92, 15. Mm-hmm. So I obviously couldn't vote, but I was like, he made sense to me.
I think the humor is such a big like tool. I think it's underrated on the Republican side, and it's one of the reasons that a lot, like, nationally they struggle, is because it's very difficult to make jokes that are like, the last joke I remember that was like a Republican joke was at their Republican national, like, not convention, but one of the debates, Rand Paul made a remark about, they asked him, like, well, what are we supposed to do about people that need health care? And he goes, well, they just let them die. And the room laughed, and I was like, but that's not what people that go vote want to, like, no one wants to go, ha, cha-ching, pulling the leather, let these people die. Mm-hmm. So like, they, like, have this problem. And like, I will give the president credit. His sense of humor is just so good.
Yeah.
That a lot of times, when he's getting all professorial, he'll lose an audience, but then he'll bust a joke and it's like right back. Like when he started winning the debates, it was because he was basically picking on, for lack of a better word, the stupidity of what McCain was saying. It'd be like, oh, or Romney, it'd just be like, oh, well, this is why this stupid. This guy hasn't even had the job yet. And everybody's like, yeah, that guy is stupid. What was I even thinking? And I think that's where he shines. I think that's where Bill Clinton shined. Mm-hmm. And for lack of a, you know, better word, that's where George Bush shined when he debated Gore was,
He had a sense of humor. And Bush had a self-deprecating humor. Mm-hmm. So there's something that connects with people. I have that kind of sense of humor. I'll always talk shit about myself, right, and I find it funny. And you kind of connect with people like that because you tear down that wall of where they feel like maybe they're inferior or they don't understand what you're talking about and stuff like that. And he just connected. It's a Texan thing. Right. I will say that I went to DC in May and I used to travel to the East Coast a lot, but I think I had so many people ask me, where the hell are you from? Mm. And I'm like, why? They're like, you're so nice and courteous. And you're like, you know, thank you, you know, no thank you, yes ma'am, no ma'am, that's just the way I am.
Right.
And I didn't realize that's such a difference. So if you're in a part of the country that's not a part of your everyday vernacular and then you hear it, it's kind of like, oh, this person's so nice.
Yeah,
and
he was very
awe. That's where W was at.
Yeah, he was very aw shucks. And it's like, if you think about it, it's like, dude, you're the president. I do want you to know about this stuff. But he would be like, oh, well, I'll just let somebody else decide because, you know, bigger brains than me can figure that out. And you're like, you're running for the office, though. Like, I do want you to know. But he was so good at making people feel like, who cares if the president knows or not? He can go take a vacation and let somebody else handle it. And people were okay with that. Because party lines also is like, now everybody's like counting Barack Obama's like vacation days, like, and how much money his vacation trips cost, or his family goes somewhere.
It's so hilarious because this is what happens in the social media age, because these are things that we knew about Bush and they were being reported on. I always find it funny when I hear Democrats say, no, mainstream media wasn't reporting on this. I'm like, were you watching TV? Because I was, and right. I was reading the paper. And with the exception of 9/11, mm-hmm. they wrote his ass pretty hard. So mm-hmm. when people act like the press gave W a pass, I'm like, I think you might be slightly high because I knew exactly. How else would I know how many vacation days the president took unless the news was covering it? How did I know every time he was in Crawford unless the news was covering it? We didn't have Facebook and Twitter and even mm-hmm. MySpace. I mean, that was what wasn't. It wasn't used for that. So we just have revisionist history about a lot of stuff and short-term memory.
You know what it is? I don't think the media has necessarily changed that much. I think the rise of Fox News has definitely affected people's perception mm-hmm. of, you know, the media. Like Fox News is definitely different with a Democrat in office as opposed to like a Republican in office, right?
Absolutely. That is a given.
Yeah. And apparently that's like the biggest news station, which says a lot about our country. But, what I've noticed though is the disrespect from other politicians, I think is changed. Like, I think that, Republicans have ridden Obama to a level that I don't think Democrats were able to even ride Bush to, because it's just a level of like, it's a lack of respect for not just him, but the office, like, where it's like, man, I didn't, like, there was, like, and it's not every single day, like, because I try to stay away from politics if I can, but it's like these landmark moments where you're just like, I don't think I've ever heard anyone heckle a president who also was a sitting member of Congress, like, you know, where you're just like, that is different.
That was absolute. I mean, the big difference, though, and I'm totally not copping, please, but the reason why Democrats couldn't is because 9/11 happened. Mm. So it was a very thin line of what you could do and what you could say against the president, because we just went through the largest national tragedy. With that being said, you know, I can speak as someone who spoke against the war and this and that, and I was called every name in the book.
Yeah,
I was called unpatriotic. I remember what happened to the Dixie Chicks. When they said they were ashamed that George W. Bush was from Texas, and they got called Saddam's sluts and things like that. You know, the one thing that the Republican Party does better than the Democrats is messaging.
Yeah.
Their messaging is so on point. They keep people in line for the most part. And that's because they focus, like I said, usually on three things.
Yeah.
You can look at it. It's Obamacare right now.
Yeah.
Benghazi. I don't know. You know, there's one other and I'm drawing a blank.
Maybe,
but it's usually always three things that they always focus on, and they'll beat that shit into the ground.
Right.
To where their people just, it's like anything you hear, they say the rule of three, anything you hear more than three times, it gets embedded in your head.
Yeah.
So they talk about the three talking points. It's harder to do when you're in a big ticket party like the Democratic Party because there's so many issues and so many different interests.
Also, you know? I feel like they will take the low road. Like, you know, when Obama got off the plane in like Louisiana, I think it was Louisiana, where the governor wouldn't shake his hand and you're just like,
That was Jan Brewer. That was Arizona.
Arizona. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mess. That's like such a level of like, I wouldn't have even thought of that to when it, like, you know, where it's almost like you begrudgingly have to like, I mean, obviously I don't respect it, but there's a begrudging level of like, God damn, you guys will do anything.
Anything. Absolutely. Like, well, and you know, I remember when Bush was in office and I was like, I think we were going, I was going to a Ranger game or something for work. You know, he used to own the Rangers. And so they were like, you know, something about the president might be here for some game. And I, you know, I worked with a bunch of Republicans and I was like, I don't want to go to the game. Y'all can take clients to the game. I don't want to go. And I didn't want to say why I didn't want to go, but I was like, I don't want to be around him. And I probably wouldn't shake his hand if I met him.
Right.
And I have to remind myself of that because I really was on some, I would spit in his face kind of mentality at that time because he stood so hardcore for everything I didn't believe in.
Right.
And, I do think that when it comes to President Obama, that there are people who genuinely disagree with his platform.
Yep.
And there's no racial aspect to it. Mm-hmm. But you can't, it's been created to where it's at because there's so many people on the Republican side or Tea Party side where it is obviously race-based, that there are these moderate Republicans that disagree with his policy, but they can't even say it.
Right.
Just like even on our side, I mean, last week I got, I don't want to use the word attacked, but I had someone in my mentions on Twitter because I feel like there's so many on our side that just wants to jump all over Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. But then you look at the person who's in your mentions and they've got Obama in their Twitter handle and it just pretty much is, okay, I see where we're coming from. We it's can't like picking, have a nuanced discussion.
Right. They're already picking sides and already have a fight and they've had this fight 75 times and it really doesn't matter what you have to say because they already have like canned responses to and what you're really trying to say is this, you're like
you're a troll, you're obviously a troll that worked for Hillary Clinton. And I was like, really? Because I supported Obama from the get-go and my dad was a Hillary Clinton supporter. I went against my family on that. My grandmother was like, Mija, what are you doing? We vote for Clinton. And I was like, well, we don't have a monarchy here.
Yeah.
You know, we can't go Bush Clinton.
Right.
And honestly, that's the reason why I chose to support Obama from the beginning was because I didn't want it to be 20 years of the same family in office. I got to know the candidate.
You know what's really weird though about that is, I think part of what hurts Republicans is because, you know, they do need to get like 50% of the vote. You know, they're trying to win. Mm-hmm. Is that they can't really push back on the racist people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what drives a lot of people crazy. It's like, I don't mind you having a policy issue with the president because that's the president. It's the office. Like, it's like the king of America. Like, no one's going to agree with everything he says. But then there's always this element of like, well, what about these racist motherfuckers? And it's like, don't mind them guys. Like, we need their votes, but we don't really agree with them.
What's happened with these guys is this goes back all the way to the 80s when they started courting the conservative Christian vote.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about wedge issues like abortion and gay marriage. You rally all these, you know, Jimmy Swaggart?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in an evangelical church.
He's one of them. He's one of them.
He's one of them. Jim Baker and all those mofos. But you court them. You don't talk about issues. You just say that the Democratic Party's for abortion.
Right.
Well, what happens is they started growing in numbers where the evangelicals were a very small sector. Most people were Baptists, even Catholics, mm-hmm. Presbyterians, what have you. But more and more of the country has moved to a non-denominational religion. And when you interject faith into anything, facts are not required. Right. I mean, I'm an atheist, but I respect people of faith.
Right.
But I also have to tell people what you believe in is faith-based. Right. And you interject faith into politics, and then all bets are off.
Right.
Because it's what it's you. What you'll hear is what I believe is, what I feel is. All the keywords that they tell women never to use in the workplace because, you know, it brings in feelings and emotions to it.
Yeah.
But once you make it faith-based, well, shit, all bets are off.
Right.
We don't have – you can show me a pie chart with everything on it. You can tell me how many days of vacation Bush went on. But it doesn't matter because what I believe in is.
Right.
So the as that segment grew larger and larger, they grew more political power. Mm-hmm. And they were needed in order for Republicans to win. Well, now in the wise words of Reverend Wright, you know, the chickens have come home to roost.
Right.
So they've taken over the Republican Party. And we're seeing it here in Texas. There are a lot of moderate Republicans, whether people want to believe it or not,
right.
on our side. I know people who work in Texas politics, and not all Texas Republicans are wackadoos.
Well,
immigration reform, and they want comprehensive approaches to things. But they've been so pushed out because that base has gotten so large that they've got a majority voice right now.
Yeah, I think most of us know at least I think I would say the vast majority of people that even if they vote Democrat or whatever, the Republicans, you know, are moderate, you know, because like very few of us run into the constantly, unless maybe that you work in some type of weird field. You don't run into just the constant like, rah, rah, rah. I hate Obama. Burn the nation down. He's a dictator. You don't run into those dudes. Like you might get trolled by those dudes online, but you don't
I'm related to him, by the way.
Like you very rarely like go out to a bar and then like you're like, man, this guy that I'm friends with is Republican and he's crazy. Like normally it's like, well, you know, I believe in these fiscal issues or I believe in this thing or that or foreign policy or something where you're like, I can kind of see that. I don't agree with it, but I can kind of see where you're coming from. But I think, you know, everything now is just so like extreme where it's like it's either this or it's that. And people are always arguing against these extremes and there's no real like discussion in the middle. But I will say also some of these issues, man, like I don't think there can be compromise. Like, it's like when people say the president's divisive or this is a divided America. And it's like, no, people are divided on some things. Like, I don't know of a compromise that I can reach with a person on, the idea of same sex, marriage or marriage equality. I can't, there's no compromise I can reach. Like,
you know, I believe they should advice on that. My father who is, you know, Democrat, but socially conservative.
Right.
And, you know, he's older, about to be 65-year-old Hispanic man. So, you know, the views on homosexuality may have not been as progressive as I wanted them to do. Now, this is where I'll give the president credit on how he worded his involvement on same-sex marriage. You make it about a very simple issue of taxation without representation.
Right.
And when it got broken down like that, that these couples are paying taxes, property taxes, when they die, they can't leave their Social Security to their partner of 25 years because the federal government doesn't recognize them as a married couple. My dad, I'll never forget, this was summer of 2012. I'm driving around for work and he calls me and says, hey, I just wanted to talk to you about something. I was like, okay, shit, what, am I in trouble? You know, I'm old and I still get the dad talk. But he's like, you know, I was thinking about, you're always giving me hell about how I feel about gay marriage. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to have this conversation, you know. And he was like, well, you know, you were right and I was wrong. And my dad's very pig-headed like me. So when you say I'm wrong, you know, it takes a lot. And he just said, it's taxation without representation. Why does the government need to be involved in a contract between two consenting adults on what they want to do? If they're not good enough to be able to say they want to get married, then they shouldn't have to pay taxes for schools or roads or this and that and whatnot. And my dad made it about money, which is what every single person can relate to. Right. The struggle is real when it comes to money. So when he said it like that, and he goes, and besides, everybody just wants to be miserable like everybody else or be in love. And I said, what brought this on? He goes, well, this was after the president had kind of talked. And he said, you know, I had to really sit back and look at how I felt about things. So he wasn't like, hey, I'm okay with homosexuality or whatever like that. You know, my dad is an avid True Blood watcher, which makes me laugh all the time because he, he'll be like, oh God, you know, like he sees something going on.
Will you talk to him? Can you just tell him that I apologize for the last season? Not for the gay stuff, but for the writing.
Oh no, he's telling me he's texting me last night, like, this is some bullshit. You know, this is some bullshit. But I've used that story. Right. I've used that story with my dad when I've registered voters. Mm-hmm. I've used that story when I've talked to my Republican friends and they're like, oh yeah. So I'll say, you know, there can be conservative, LGBT people, because there may be every other thing that they agree with, just not that one thing. We vote Democrat. We might not believe in everything, but you make it about money, or you make it about on a level that an everyday person that's struggling to pay their bills and do whatever. Yeah. You know, I'm not married, and I don't think I'll ever get married, but if I stay with, you know, my partner that I live with for 25 years, why shouldn't I be able to leave? Because he's of the opposite sex. I can, you know, he's on my benefits right now. If, like, I died in a car accident,
right,
he'd get half of my life insurance.
Right.
And they wouldn't even question it. But if it was my same-sex partner here in the state of Texas, it probably would be an issue.
Well, yeah,
and
I definitely
break it down like that. It's just like, you know, come on, people.
Yeah, I definitely think that's definitely an angle you can tackle it. It's just that, I guess, like, with some people, they just don't care. You know what I mean? Like, you can present all that logic and then it's just like, yeah, well, I just don't think it's right. And it's like, for some issues, you're just not going to be able to get everyone to agree on, which is just part of, you know, that's why we have a political process, is because people aren't going to agree sometimes. But that's definitely a great angle to tackle it. Earlier you said, first of all, you've mentioned this several times and I do want to say, you do not look 38. I guess black don't crack, brown don't something, like.
You ought to see my mom. My mom's going to be 63, and she looks like she's 42. It's a pretty interesting experience.
There you go. Yeah. Keep it moisturized.
It's like right. Top for the morenas, you know, the dark skin.
And then the other thing, you said at one point you were about to get married to someone who was, like, opposite of you politically, like, how is that possible?
Well, he wasn't opposite of me. He voted Democratic, but he gave, I mean, if he spent half the time knowing about politics that he did watching ESPN, maybe he was just a meathead. And I was going to marry him because I am Mexican, and it's like, no one talked to me about college when I was growing up. It was like, you graduate high school, you get an okay job. And you find a husband, you get married, and you have kids. So that was pushed. And by when I met my ex, I was 24, and it was like, you need to settle down, you need to get married and have kids. So I had health issues, so my time frame to have kids was pretty limited. And I was with him for like 5 years, and I was about to break up with him when he asked me to marry him, which is pretty funny.
That, you know what, by the way, that is amazing how often that is the story of, like, divorces. It's like, it just starts with, I was ready to quit this motherfucker, and then he was like, let's get married. It's like, well, I guess. Like what an opposite horrible, reaction.
Oh my God. Let me tell you, he asked me to marry him in front of my family on Christmas.
Oh man, so much pressure. How do you say no?
Let me even tell you, even further. My man now, I met him when I was with my ex, right? Mm-hmm. And, cause I consulted for this restaurant. And anyways, he was a regular there, and we hit it off. We could talk history and all kinds of stuff. So then people started noticing, like, why are you always talking to him? Like, you know, my ex's name was Mario. I was like, you know, we're going to tell Mario. And I was like, I don't care. You know, I had never dated a black man before, by the way. Not that it was an issue for me.
Right.
But it just didn't, you know, I was like, to me, I didn't look at him as like that. Well, so then we were there one night, and he was talking to me, and my ex was staring at me, And he was like, you know, if you want him to ask you to marry you, you need to just keep talking to me because he can't stop looking at you. Mm. And I laughed, ha ha ha, whatever. And literally 3 weeks later was Christmas. And he asked me to marry him and I started crying and everyone was like, oh, and I was like, no, y'all don't get it. I'm crying because I was ready to break up with him and we lived together. So wow. It was just one of those. Yeah, it was pretty jacked up. I said yes. And then I got wrapped into the getting married bullshit that women get into.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, 8 months later, 7 months later, I called the wedding off.
Oh man. So did you, were like, how close was the wedding?
It was 6 months. Let's see. We were getting married in March, and I broke up with him in July. So okay. I had my dress, I had the church, I had the invitations, I had the caterer, I had everything, wow. everything. And I, you know, I got caught up.
Yeah.
It happens.
Well, you know what? I can't blame women for that because, like, I think society, like, kind of pushes a lot of pressure towards women to get mm-hmm. married. And by get married, I mean have a wedding because, it's, like, it's not even about the marriage for some reason. Like, it's really mm-hmm. like, the dream, your dream day. This is all your day. It's the day you get to be a princess. It's your day. But then there's never like this consideration for like, and then you have this person that you have to be, live with for the rest of your life and eternity. Yo, so
let me tell you, I could write a book about the experience of going through all of that. And then, you know, I winded up hooking up with the guy that was the reason why he asked me to marry him.
Yeah.
And, you know, so then it was like, oh, hey, mom and dad, I'm not getting married. Oh, and by the way,
yeah,
you know, I'm dating this black Muslim Republican, you know?
And they were like, oh, awesome. This is what we're talking
what
about.
What was funny is my dad met my current boyfriend mm-hmm. when we were just friends, because he came and had dinner with me at that restaurant and my dad liked him. They hit it off.
Yeah.
And my dad didn't, you know, they didn't really know my ex. I didn't see him a whole lot. He worked in the restaurant business, so he worked a lot of hours. But so it was just like, okay, well, he's cool. We're yeah. good with it. And you know, that was 9 years ago.
Now, did anyone come out and go, well, you know what, Monica? I didn't want to say anything, but I never liked that motherfucker.
Anyway. Oh shit. Everybody came. I got one better for you. Wait for it, Rod. I had some of my uncles tell me we thought he was gay. I was like, what?
And y'all gonna let me marry him?
I was like, y'all gonna let me marry his ass and y'all thought he was gay? I was like, he wasn't gay. He was just kind of a man. And that was the thing. I could get away with whatever I wanted.
Right.
Honestly, I ran that situation and I was able to do whatever I wanted. But I was like, yo, how are you going to tell me that? Like,
yeah.
That's the thing about, people of color families yeah. is on some, especially, I mean, I can't speak about black families. I can right. speak about Mexican families. They will tell you if you've gained weight.
Yeah.
They will tell you if yeah. you lost too much weight. They yeah. will tell you if they don't like your boyfriend or mm-hmm. they'll just tell you shit. They have no filter. So I was like, you could have just told me you didn't like him. You didn't have to tell me you thought he was gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, considering I thought he was gay, I sure did invite him to a lot of football games and stuff.
That is awesome though. When it's like, yeah, we broke up. Oh, thank God. I hate that motherfucker. By the way, I never say that. I don't care if it's been like a decade since y'all broke up. Uh-huh. You will never get me to talk shit about your ex because, I'm so scared that people are going to get back together and then it's going to be like, oh, well, I heard that you didn't never like me in the first place. I'm like, oh, why did I tell you?
I'll tell you what, my family didn't even wait to see if this was going to be a long-term breakup or not. I was like, damn. And you know, Mexican families have a thing that's called with weddings, padrinos and padrinas. It's just like they sponsor. This is the racket, by mm-hmm. the way. This is the pyramid scheme of Mexican weddings. Mm-hmm. You get married and you're like, oh, you know, I need someone to sponsor my cake. So your aunt, uncle will pay for your cake or they'll pay for this. So it gets how stuff gets paid for. So I was like, I didn't even ask for any of you mofos to pay for anything in my wedding because I said, you know, I wanted to have, for lack of better phrasing, a white people wedding, you right. know, where kids aren't running around knocking shit over and you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, y'all offered and now y'all offer to pay for a wedding with someone you don't even want me to marry? Like,
yeah.
I don't do that. I don't even go have drinks with someone I don't like. How am I going to, you know, tell someone? But, you know, I get where they're coming from. They don't want to get in people's business and tell them they don't like
yeah,
the person.
Yeah, yeah.
But don't tell me afterwards. Just be like, oh, I'm sorry. Are you okay? Right. Do you need anything? Not so. That guy was an asshole.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's uncomfortable for everyone involved, but like, I don't have to tell you that I didn't like him. It's like, and like I said, there's plenty of people that, they've broken up with people that I didn't like, and you'll never catch me talking shit. Like, I'll just go, oh, well, you broke up. Well, that's crazy, man. I hope everything's all right. But in my mind, I'm like, yes, yes, we can hang out again. That person was terrible, you know? What forms does like your, political, like activism take? Because I know sometimes we'll talk about how, you know, we see people online and everything's like the hashtag activists and there's the, yeah. There's like so many forms.
In fact, what I'll do when we get off this is I will send you a screenshot of all my muted hashtags because it'll make you laugh. It's one of those things. I think what happens with people is you get your wake up call in the middle of Twitter activism, and you just jump all over it. And people, I'm not going to completely discredit it because some people are getting exposed to stuff that maybe they never would have in the past. But with that said, people think that being online and on Twitter all day talking about triggering issues, if you will, is equivalent to being out there walking and working with people. It's not. I don't care what anyone says. It's just not. And I'll probably get shit for saying this, but that's just how I feel. I don't hide how I feel about this online.
Right.
But if you're not talking to people about how they can make a difference or how voting, and I know people get pissed off when you say go vote, right. Go vote, but that's how, my dad said this at breakfast last week, if your activism doesn't include getting people to the polls, what's the point of your activism? Mm. And I have different things. I'm a hunger advocate for people who are food insecure. I'm on a board with my local food bank. When I get people involved, I'm like, you know, the farm bill came through. You need to vote. You need to call your member of Congress. You need to do this, this, that. If you're not doing that, then what's happening? Who are you talking to? You're talking to people who already kind of feel like you do. So you're kind of in the echo chamber. And you just have to do action. It's further than that. And people just seem to really be caught up in the hashtag activism, you know, with the whole Suey Park thing and all that drama that was going on. And where's that gotten anyone? I don't see anything from that. So what was your goal? What is your goal? Do you just want to talk to other people? Do you want to build up your Twitter presence?
Right. Yeah.
I think a lot of people are wanting to build up their Twitter presence. Right. And if you just are honest about it, if someone told me the reason why I'm a Twitter hashtag activist is because I want to build my presence on Twitter so I can further my activism, whether it's in print, on TV, this and that, or I want to get a job where I'm an advocate for something, I will absolutely respect that. If that's your long game approach, I get that. But the fact that people aren't saying that when it's clearly that's what's happening with them is where I'm just kind of like,
people aren't that stupid, you know, like you can kind of see it. And then I think also like the social part of social media and social activism is becoming like for some people, it's like capital social, lowercase activism. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to kind of see. And I'm sure like, if you just look at the net results, it's probably, you know, I'm sure maybe somebody was helped or someone, became aware of something that they wouldn't have. And I'm not trying to discount that because, you know, that does matter. But, so much of it is just like petty stuff. Like today there's this thing going where, Mike Brown, this kid was killed and, you know, and obviously it's like this sad, it's tragic. And there's people that are galvanizing online that like try to have impact and are discussing their feelings about it. And I completely can relate. Yeah. But then there's also going to be, and you can already see there's going to be some people that are like, all right, how do I get this hashtag to get you to my event? Yesterday, someone hit me up and was like, hey, can you retweet this hashtag for me so that we can like make it, you know, go up or whatever in this trend. And I was like, well, I kind of already discussed my feelings about it yesterday and I'm watching Sharknado right now. I really am trying to decompress and not think about this shit anymore. It's kind of depressing. Yeah. And you know, and that person was cool and everything was fine. But it's just this idea of like, hey, now it's my turn with my trend. And, you know, and why didn't you support this thing? People right now are going in on a reporter who's reporting about it because he will, manually retweet people rather than
the dude from Global Grind.
Now I don't, you know, for the record, I don't know enough about the manual retweet game or why it's so fucked up that he put out these words and credited a person without hitting the retweet button for certain people. But what I do know is that for a person on the outside looking in, now it's about the pettiness towards him.
Exactly.
As opposed to the message.
Just to give you a little, this is where you, and of course I can say that and no one's taking my tweets and doing that. But again, I'm putting it on a public forum. So that's neither here nor there. But okay. So what are you more concerned about? Are you more concerned about that or the actual topic that they're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And if one has more of a more Twitter followers than the other, the bigger goal, if your bigger goal here is making people aware of what's happening on the ground in Ferguson right now, it really, in my opinion, shouldn't matter where it's coming from.
Right.
Because if the person is tweeting about it, is if their goal, the original person, is to let the world know what's happening on the ground, mm-hmm. then that should be what matters. Mm-hmm. Or is it that you're tweeting about it because you want to get more retweets? That's where it's like, okay, so you're going on about manual retweets, but do you realize how, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know the word I'm looking for, but it's mainly, it's kind of dark in my opinion.
Well,
you're complaining about something of yours, you're not getting recognition for something, and what you're talking about is the death of a child.
Yeah, it's cynical and petty, and it's one of the things, like, you know, and obviously, like I said, I'm not a huge political person, but it's one of the things that really turned me off of politics and discussing them online specifically.
Yeah.
Like, I've had way more in-depth conversations about politics offline with people face-to-face because, you know, like, I care, but online sometimes it makes you so cynical because you're like, this kid died, and ultimately, you care about spreading your brand more than you care about
that,
the idea of, you know, like more than you care about the idea of justice.
It's a little morbid.
Yeah, it's really, it's really morbid. And like, you know, I can never separate the idea that politics is kind of like, while I understand the theory of it, a lot of this shit is just real people's lives. So like academically speaking, for a lot of things might be cool and in a callous way. And I understand that that's the way some things have to be done, but as a human being, sometimes I'm just like, okay, that's cool, but like those kids really are homeless. You know what I mean? Where it's like, like I get that we get to have this like fun discussion over tea or go to my blog or listen to my podcast about it. But at the end of the day, we didn't solve an issue if all we did was manage to get retweeted 700 times or whatever. You know, I actually feel uncomfortable sometimes. Like, I was talking about the, what happened was we had a guest on our podcast who, he was on Twitter and we finished the show. And then right after that, everybody found out about the Mike Brown thing. And, and people were like, you know, discussing it, you know, like, and he hit me up and was like, hey man, cause he saw me saying that, you know, as a black male, we pretty much all get this talk when we're like, sometimes as young as 8, 10, about like how to interact with police, because you need to be like, it's almost like when women get the don't get sexually assaulted talk, where it ain't your fault, but listen, I'm going to put my baby girl out into the world. Let me tell you the things that I want you to do to protect yourself. We get it for cops, right?
Yeah.
And so he was like, can you use this hashtag? I got the talk. And so I was like, you know what? I will. And we kind of discussed it or whatever. And it was, you know, a very genuine, sincere thing. And then like all of a sudden, like people that follow me would be like, oh, go to this person's timeline, retweet him, do this. And I felt uncomfortable and stopped talking about it. Cause I was like, I don't want it to be the activist or come to, you know, like, hey, tomorrow, what are you going to give a sermon on? Like, this is just how I feel right now. And that's it, guys. You know?
You know, I take the approach with stuff on specifically on Twitter. I mean, you and I are friends on Facebook, which means that, you know, our boo level is really high. You know,
we totally go together.
I don't let people know my full name on Twitter.
Yeah.
But you see the difference, I'm sure, if you look at my timeline on Facebook versus Twitter. Everything on Facebook is completely cynical and upbeat. But stuff that I don't know about, I don't tweet about. And that doesn't make me an ally. I'm using my air quotation marks right now. That doesn't make me an ally. That makes me a smart person.
Right.
That there are some things I don't need to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I call him my stepson, because I've been with this child since he was, you know, 6 years old. But he's 14. He's starting high school. He's a young black man in Texas. So of course, when I see things like this happen, I immediately think about him. You know, I talk to my boyfriend and like, if you had that talk, well, he's like, I'm from fucking Newark. I'm from Brick City.
Right.
I had that talk with him when he turned 7.
Right.
You know, about how to act. And and I'll take my man's perspective, because I know what it's like to be a Mexican woman in Texas. I don't know what it's like to be a black woman. I don't know what it's like to be a black man.
Right.
And he'll tell me his ideas on something. And he's like, you know, people will get mad. He says, people will get mad because I believe in having the talk with my son about how to act. You know, we do live in this world where we have to be respectful, and the way you deal with the police or way you deal with authority, and that's just not going to change.
Right.
So you can put your head in the sand and act like, well, I shouldn't have to have this talk with my child. And then you're not preparing your child for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, so I have that talk with him all the time. And I said, cause you know, he's not on Twitter, which is pretty funny. But I tell him about stuff that happened. When I told him about this, you know, I said that I can't help but to think about him.
Right.
You know, what kind of world is he living in? I think about my nieces. You know, they're dealing with stuff right now because the anti-Latino rhetoric is so high. But I sit back. I could have gone online and talked about my stepson and said all these things, but that's not my place.
Right.
It's not my experience.
Right.
I don't expect people to talk about stuff that's not their experience.
Right.
So it's moments like this where you can sit back and you can learn a few things, or you can, like me, because I have some self-care, I will mute a hashtag because the world is shitty in its own right that I live every day, that I really try to focus on the good things.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds like kind of, may make me sound naive, but I don't think so, because I've noticed that when I talk about things on a positive level, I seem to inspire more people to get involved than I do when I focus on the negative.
Yeah. Well, also, what about your mental health? Like, that's one of the worst things about the social aspect of this shit is the allyship. Which I don't want any allies. I only want friends.
Mm-mm. Like, that's what I'm saying.
It's pointless. You're not really getting to know me if you opt out of certain conversations because you're more scared of being wrong than being like educated or like learning from me or listening. Even like, I would rather have a friend who disagrees with me than to have like an ally who like, I just don't have an opinion on anything about black shit. And you're like, you're like, well, you like, so if you, I don't know, like, so you don't think putting a whole lot of sugar in the Kool-Aid is crazy? It's like, nope, I have no opinion on that. You're like, whatever, motherfucker. I've been to your house.
I don't want to be friends with people like that.
Right.
I don't want associates like that. They don't help you in any way at all. The whole purpose of social engagement is for you to learn and grow as a person. If all you do is surround yourself by people who agree with you, you're never going to grow. You're never going to question your decisions. You're never going to question life. That's just how that beneficial,
like,
to you.
Or like those, you know? Sometimes I'll see a conversation, it'll go like this, right? Group minority person says this thing, right? Mm-hmm. Other person that is not in that group says X thing, and not in the like the offensive, like I'm gonna troll you way, but like maybe they just don't know any better. And then it becomes a like, you don't get to speak about this because you're such and such. And that is, that is never a conversation I want to have in real life with anybody. Crazy. Like, I really do want to, I actually do want to know what you think, because maybe we can learn. Or, and every once in a while, you know, God forbid, you might learn something from somebody that isn't in your group. Like, I remember, I was, my dad said to me one time, it was when I was like maybe 13. I went through this phase where I had a friend who was like, Nation of Islam Muslim. Like, he was exploring, it, like he was trying to be, but we didn't know shit about it. So he was just like doing his, what he thought it was, which was basically hating white people. So he was like, he went to the front of my house and like the window was up, so my dad could kind of hear us without like seeing us. And he just goes on this big rant about like, man, these white people this and these crackers and this and these devils. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I guess, you know, I don't, I mean, I don't really, like we, our neighborhood was predominantly Black. We didn't have any white people to hate. So it was just kind of like, all right, if you say they're the worst, you still want to play Transformers or no, you know?
Yeah.
And so he goes home and then my dad comes out and he does this, and my dad's hilarious. So he does like this mocking impersonation of Damien, my friend. He's like, yeah, the white man is and the devil day. He's like, listen, son, let me tell you something. Some of the things I've learned that have helped me the most in life have come from white men. He's like, it doesn't mean that you need to worship them or they're better than us, but just never begrudge like the source of information that can help you. And I see that happen online all the time where it's just like, I don't give a fuck if you want to talk about, I don't know, tech opportunities in tech or business or even, you know, social, whatever it is. It's just like, oh, it came from this demographic of a person. I don't want to hear that shit. And it's just like,
Let me tell you, if you notice, my wonderful vanity name on Twitter is the Vagina Avenger trademark.
Mm-hmm.
And that came about because this whole movement came and, you know, you've got to put the preface up.
Right.
That about transgender individuals, and that when you use things like vagina or penis, that you're somehow alienating them from the process. And this was about clinics being closed here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me I can't identify with having a vagina? I have a vagina.
Right.
I like my vagina. My vagina is my best friend.
Right.
You know, why can't I say that I have a vagina and I'm proud of it? Like, how is that oppressing someone else?
Right.
Okay. And I'm like, we're talking about in the state of Texas where they've pretty much told you that you are an incubator for a baby. We had a woman on life support because she had a baby in her uterus.
Right.
And you're getting caught up on terminology. And we can barely get our legislators to understand that these health clinics do more than just provide abortions.
Right.
I received health care through Planned Parenthood for almost 3 years, and they saved my life.
Right.
I would have had full-blown ovarian cancer if it hadn't been for them. So I'm like, what's your fucking goal here? Is your goal to keep – if you keep a health clinic open that's going to provide care for everyone, it doesn't matter what they identify themselves for. But if you're going to get caught up on this terminology – which I know it's easy for me to say because I'm not this person, but what's more important to you here? Is it more important that there's verbiage in this piece of paper, or is it important to have healthcare for everybody?
Right.
And then it was like, why should I be shamed because I identify myself as a woman? And then you got this, I got called transphobic. I got told I was a cis, which I didn't even know what that meant. And I'm like, okay, so I identify with the gender that I was born with. Just say that.
Right.
Right. But I wasn't going to back down. Right. And I lost some people that I was – what I considered to be friends, people I talked to offline on Twitter because of that. And I think there's a mentality of getting all the ally cookies. You hear that a lot. I'm a part of this group and I'm cool. And I see it a lot with white women trying to be down with oppressed – what is considered oppressed people.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting to me because I'm here in Texas. I'm in North Texas. When we lost funding for the women's healthcare program, I went to Planned Parenthood rallies and 90% of the people were there were white women, upper middle class, who will never benefit from these procedures, never benefit from these services, but they're knocking on doors, making phone calls and writing checks.
Right.
Who am I to tell them that they don't give a shit about me and my cause?
Right.
When they're the ones and people, you see, I'm getting all fired up.
It's all right. This is what I like.
People will say, well, they'll make excuses for poor people not getting involved with shit.
Right.
I'm sorry. I don't do that. I see people who fall under a certain poverty level do a lot of shit that they like to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And all you're asking for them is to come out and support a program that they're benefiting from. And these rallies are happening on Saturdays. You can volunteer at night. There's times that you can, things that you can do. And there's all these excuses made for a group of people that are not involved while you're hating and talking down a group
to the
of people
involved.
That are involved.
Right.
And, I'm not going to sit there and say that white men and white women don't have my best interests at heart because I'm brown.
Right.
It's not been, and in fact, the people who have oppressed me the most are people that look just like me.
Right.
Instead of people that don't look like me.
Right.
And I've had mentors that were white Republican men that took me under their wing and taught me the business because I didn't finish college. Right. I wouldn't have the job I have now if it wasn't for them. So I think anytime you paint a group of people with a broad brush,
right,
it's ungood. It's not good, because then I'm going to look at someone's Twitter presence and I'm going to, oh, okay. And this is me.
Right.
They're one of them. Where right. they, people can't take ownership for the faults in their own life. And there's times when I will talk to my boyfriend and he'll be like, damn, you sound like a Republican. And I'm like, I know. But what's so bad about that idea?
Because it's not like everything that a Republican would have to say has no merit.
It's bad. No.
You know what I mean? Like that's the thing with the labels of it, where it's just like, well, obviously that you're such and such, so you have no value to add to this conversation. Like, you never really know until you hear people out. Which is probably my biggest, like, that might be my biggest failing, is that I do listen to everybody at least once. And I probably do need to get over that, because sometimes I do feel like I know where they're going and I should just like hand it off at the pass. But, you know, yeah. I'm learning, you know what I mean? But another thing I did want to ask you about, this is ironic because we've talked so long and I promise I'm going to get you out of here.
It's okay. We're good. This is fun.
I invited you on here because I don't know anything about immigration. As you can probably tell on Twitter, I don't even talk about it. I don't talk about Palestine and Israel because I don't know shit about that either. I'll listen to other people talk about it and I'll be like, wow, that does seem fucked up. But then I don't say anything because I'm not taking their knowledge as firsthand knowledge. For immigration, like, is that being like one of the hot button issues right now? Like, it almost seems like, I know it didn't come out of nowhere, but it almost seems like 2014 was like the year of like, oh, it's back, baby. We about to talk about this immigration. Like,
well, because you're talking about midterms and you're talking about everything's political, obviously. But you're talking about a subject that can mobilize a large segment of voters. So immigration is important. I still struggle with immigration because, you know, I'm so far removed from that. I tell people all the time, my people were here when Texas was Mexico. So I have a different experience. I happen to work with two Dreamers that I volunteer for on a political campaign.
Now, what exactly are Dreamers?
Dreamers are kids that were brought here by their parents illegally. Mm. So they were either born here or brought across, you know, the border by their parents.
Okay.
So in other words, unto no fault of their own.
Right.
So they've got deferred action, which means that they can stay in this country. They don't have citizenship. They can't vote, but they can work. I don't know the specifics as far as like green card status and things like that, but these two girls are having to reapply for their DACA cards. And one of them works a full-time job and volunteers with me probably 15 hours a week, knocking on doors to get people to vote. So, you know, we have a large segment. Everyone seems to think they're all Mexican, which is not the case. If you're a Latino in the United States, you're Mexican. Sorry, my Puerto Rican and Dominican and Cuban brothers and sisters, but that's life.
Yeah.
Guatemalan,
you know, yeah, El Salvador.
No, I mean, here's the difference. Yeah. I like to tell people, you're from a little bitty ass island in the middle of the ocean. We have a big ass country. So our segment's going to be a little bit bigger and broader.
Yeah.
But, and you know, I think it's funny because I think Eva Longoria said it best one time on Real Time. She's like, we're not a monolith.
Right.
You know, there's a divide. Even I've heard anti-Mexican rhetoric from Cubans, you know, and I'm like, yo, y'all got wet foot, dry foot. You have no dog in this fucking fight, you know. But, you know, you're talking about people that are coming here for what every other immigrant group came here for. And you're going to hear people that are Irish and Italian and even Chinese or what have you, and say, my parents came here legally. Really? You might want to go on to the government's immigration site, learn about immigration in this country, where when we had open borders, it's because slavery ended and we needed cheap labor.
Right.
And that's why we allowed certain groups to come in and be completely just abused.
Yep.
You know, it was slave labor. I mean, all you have to do is pull up the rhetoric that was going around about Italians and Irish people in this country. And we consistently repeat ourselves. But this is just, it's a large group of people that are coming over. I think there should be comprehensive immigration reform, but people don't realize how hard it is and how expensive it is to become a citizen. Mm-hmm. And it can take 10 years. It can cost $20,000, $30,000. And you're talking about people who are making less than minimum wage. They're working and they're paying taxes. So there's they're not allowed. The only ones that are allowed to be on the system are their kids. So right. Medicaid and things like that. That does happen because they're born in, you know, the States. So people want to call them anchor babies or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
But they are contributing to society. And it's hard for me because I grew up Mexican American where I don't speak Spanish and right. people from Mexico would sometimes treat me different because I didn't call me coconut or, you know, whatever. Mm. But I think our community right now has gotten a wake up call that they look at us all the same. They're, right. you know, people don't look at me and know I'm from the United States. Right. And I don't, when people say, what are you? I say, I'm Mexican, you know, mm. and then some of my relatives are on that bullshit where they say, I'm American, you know, okay, mm. whatever. That's not how the world looks at you. You're, right. you're brown and you got some curly ass hair. So, yeah. and some thick ass eyebrows, you know, you're not a wasp by any right. means, you know, no one's going to ever confuse you with that. But the situation with the kids at the border really kind of spiked things over where you're like, oh shit, this is getting real. Mm-hmm. These kids are coming from other parts of Central America and not Mexico. Mexican kids that show up at the border get turned back. Mm-hmm. The kids that are coming from Guatemala and Honduras, El Salvador are receiving almost like asylum status because they're coming from, you know, places where kids are being trafficked and things like that. Mm-hmm. And Bush passed that, law in 2008 where they were actually given a chance to go before the court and do things like that. Mm. The bigger thing here is that it's getting bad and you can approach it in two ways. You can be the assholes that are going to surround a bus of kids yeah. that are of no fault of their own, or you can try to fix the situation. And I mean, I have no problem with the United States, with the president going to these other countries and saying, y'all need to get your shit together because yeah. all these kids are coming over here. We don't have the resources to process this.
Right.
But I don't see turning those kids back right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
what are they doing right now? They have them in like
they're in detention centers. Yeah. Stacked on stacked of each
wow.
other.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So like with these kids, they come up by themselves, like their parents aren't with them.
Yeah.
So then they end up in the centers, and then now mm-hmm. that's the what do we do with these kids? That's the big yeah. like political issue right now.
Yeah, wow. I mean, and I'll say it: if these kids were lighter skin mm-hmm. and their last names were McIntyre, the country would open their arms to them. Even if they were coming from Syria or right. they were coming from somewhere else, I guarantee you it'd be a little bit different. They're not right. recognizing. They want to say, well, it's those people's fault, it's the cartels. What about the people, you know, that are involved in wars that have nothing to do with them? Mm-hmm. They're just trying to live their lives. These kids are just trying to live their lives, and they're just trying to find a safe place. And, you know, people are like, what kind of parent would do that? Well, you got to really ask yourself, what kind of shit is going on there
right.
for you to say, my kid is safer going on this however many mile trek it is to the United States than staying here?
Yeah.
And they're dealing with the level of poverty that we don't even understand. Even though we fell our poor here, there's still more services for them than there are for anybody else right. in any other parts of the country, I mean, in the world, you know. So I just, as a human being, I try to look at things just on yeah. a human being level. I don't see how you can say, fuck those kids and they need to go back.
Yeah, it's very callous. And especially, like I said, online, you get to see, like, people's, like, anonymous egos like just be rampant, and people can be so fucking cold where it's just like, fuck them kids, I don't care about that shit. And you're like, oh, so if you these,
oh, let,
like
yeah.
if these kids,
I mean,
were,
you know,
like
how much shit I'm getting, how much yeah. I've been blown away that Democrats have been arguing with me online because of my criticism of the president right. in regards to deportation mm-hmm. levels. And I actually had an African-American woman tell me, well, I don't have to worry about my people being deported, so why should I, you know, care about this? And I was just,
wow.
What? Really? Yeah. Like, I screenshotted that shit. I got that saved on my phone. I'm like, word? Because you're crazy. Like,
yeah.
What are, you know, and.
Well, I don't understand how any oppressed group doesn't have at least empathy for another yeah. group's struggle. Like, I've always said on our show, one of the reasons, like, there's certain issues I, you know, that I look at, like, domestic violence, same-sex marriage, like, there's certain things that I relate to, not because I'm like, oh, I'm in this group, or it's just because I'm like, well, through the prism of racism, I've dealt with certain shit, and then you look at the power structure that's against that person, and you're like, oh, that's pretty much the same exact fucking thing, except it's about a different issue, but it's the same tactics, the same, like, disenfranchisement. And it's very weird. Like I've said on the show, that to me, I don't care what people say, it is worse when a black person is racist or homophobic or, you know, xenophobic. It's worse.
You have self-awareness of what it feels like.
Yeah.
We actually know. You know, what's funny is, I used to be on OK Player a lot. Way back in the day. Mm. So I, you know, completely anonymous. And I remember when, Bush was pushing through a comprehensive immigration reform. And I was really shocked at the amount of black people talking mad shit about Mexicans.
Yeah.
Mad shit. And I get it. Like, one said, they never gave a shit about our cause. And I was like, ugh. Okay. Here's the thing. I had a long talk with my boyfriend about this. He moved to Houston in the late 80s. And he said, every Mexican I dealt with, they were like ghosts.
Right.
They kept their head down. They just didn't want to be...
Yeah, no problem.
They just want to be best with. That doesn't mean they were trying to be a good one. That doesn't mean that they didn't care.
Right.
They were just trying to be invisible.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
I mean, what are they going to do if we do have a rally and the police show up and they go, all right, let's see everybody's license and registration. We're taking everybody down to the fucking precinct. And it's like, oh, I'm not even supposed to be here in this country right now. completely different consequences.
Some of the stuff that's going on with this. And I stopped being on OK Player because I was like, this shit is kind of crazy. And at the same time, I have family members who were always Democrats until we got a black president. You know, I mean, I know that there are internal prejudices.
Right.
You know, I know that there's always going to be groups of people that are minorities or that they're going to want to be a good one. I get that. But I don't see how you can be someone who's experienced probably at some point in your life some sort of prejudice and be okay with another group being oppressed.
Yeah.
And we're talking about a group of people that are just – I can speak about being Latino or whatever you want to call us. Yeah. My dad would kill me if you heard me say that. I'm Mexican.
We use Latino when we play Guess the Race on our podcast.
That's just great because it can be so many different.
Yeah, it's like a catch-all, and the racism is always – it doesn't care. The racism is bad.
it's pretty funny, you know. I mean, that's a whole other, you know, thing within our own group. But, you know, I mean, I just don't understand how you can look at things and just be okay with it. And we are a very family-oriented group of people. I live a mile and a half from my parents and my brother. Mm-hmm. I see my parents and talk to my parents every day.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying all Mexicans' families are like that, but a good portion of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of structure we like to have, and we care for each other. You take in your family members. This is what you do. And, you know, my grandfather used to help people that were here illegally all the time, find housing and do stuff like that. So, you know, you see it. I have, you know, people that are related to me that, you know, will use a term like wetback. And I'm just like, what? You know, it happens. And I think if you're not exposed to it, unless you're in Texas or California or Arizona or New Mexico, you know, most of the Mexicans that live in your area are going to be quiet.
Right.
They're working in your restaurants. You don't know. They have kids that go to your school and, you know, they're working jobs that I don't care what anyone says that people don't want to work. I've been in that in a service industry at some level where, you know, we had a lot of people from Mexico that would do jobs that other people would come in and say, oh, I'm not going to work for that pay. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of misconceptions and things about it. But at the end of the day, I mean, they just want to be contributing members of society here. They love this country. The thing that you're going to see about what I've noticed about Mexicans is many of them that are coming over here, they love Mexico, but they want to be Americans.
Right.
A lot of times other Hispanic groups will, a lot of Cubans will, they want to go back to Cuba.
Right.
They want to go back to their homeland. They're just not, can't be there now because of like Castro and that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always think, okay, so here's a group that got amnesty. that have short-term goals that probably want to go back. And then here's a group that want to come and be a part of this country. Why can't we not treat them all the same? Mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying that because I'm Mexican. I think even if I wasn't, I would look at it like that. You know, but it is divisive, and people want to talk about what the country can afford, what it can't afford. Well, they're here.
Right.
So, you know, if all of something like 11 million people left this country, it would kill our economy in certain states.
Not to mention, I mean, we do find the money for the things we care about, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
We want to go, like I saw today, Rick Perry said that he was not against putting troops on the ground in Iraq. You know, it's like, you know, that costs money, you know, and I don't understand how you could, now I don't know his stance on immigration, but I'm just saying, I don't see how you can make the argument, let's go spend millions, possibly billions of dollars to kill people in Iraq, or we could bring these people in and like take care of them at our border. You know, like it, to me, it's just very odd to disconnect where it's like, no, killing people with guns? Yes. I don't care how much that shit costs. You're like, all right, cool. What about feeding these people? Fuck them kids. You're like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. And, you know, I don't know if you recall, but during the 2012 primaries, Perry got lambasted because he talked about how we should treat these kids that are here of no fault of their own.
Yes.
And I mean, aside from him having his I'm slightly high moment and forgetting what his third talking point was.
Yeah.
That's the shit that took him down, and people forget that.
Yeah.
You know, so it pushes him further to the right because he was saying they should get in-state tuition. They should, you know, they're here. They're going to college. They're, you know, getting jobs and you know, enriching the community. That's not what Texas is about. And we had I shared it online, but there was a mayor in Burleson, Texas, which is, I don't know, about 20, 30 minutes south of where I live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talked about, we talk all this shit about being the greatest nation and the greatest state. If you believe that, then these kids shouldn't be a threat to you.
Right.
It shouldn't scare you. Because if you believe that, then you believe we're a great nation that can take care of people.
Right.
And people just always want to be revisionist about stuff. And, you know, if we welcome these folks in and they become members of society, who knows, maybe 40, 50 years from now, they'll oppress the next group. That's just the oppression Olympics. That's what we do. You know, you get removed from it and you forget. Folks are living here. So what are you supposed to do?
It's an American, you know? It's an American tenet, right? It's, it's engraved on the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tire. Give me your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Like we do advertise this as America, but only when it's convenient to us, right? It's like,
we can let other groups from overseas come over here and work to give them, let them work on expired visas and stay here. And, you know, we're not calling immigration on folks.
Right.
But you have a group of other people that live south of the border and are being treated subhuman.
Right.
I can't sit easy with that. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know enough to know what the solution is. But I know that if people are here, and I know people personally, that their families are just like my family. Right. And when they say they don't pay taxes, bullshit. Right. You know, if you don't own a home, people are going to think you don't pay taxes.
Right.
You know, so I don't, that argument is invalid. Every time you go to the store and you buy something, you're paying city and state taxes.
Not to mention if you get paid over the table, you're definitely paying taxes. And if you get paid under the table, no one's trying to kick those people out of the country and no one's trying to take those people to jail. So
no one's trying to take those businesses.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And, you know, they want to do e-verify and this and that. Well, why aren't we finding companies that are robbing jobs from Americans by paying people that are undocumented slave wages, if you will? But we're going to blame the person that's here just trying to provide for their family instead of the corporation that's taking advantage of them.
Right.
And like anyone who wants to get like just a little bit of strange insight into it. There was a book and there was a movie called Fast Food Nation. Mm-hmm. And I like to tell people to watch that because it shows them on a very microcosm level about something as the food industry is concerned, fast food industry, that there's a whole system there. There's a food manufacturer that provides product to this, it's supposed to be like a McDonald's, if you will.
Yeah.
And they're hiring people from across the border, undocumented. They have no rights. They get most of them on meth so mm-hmm. they can work long hours. Then they get hurt and then they fire them.
Right.
And this unsafe practices that happen. And we all contribute to this problem is my bigger right. point. And when you don't look at it that way, you don't see it.
Right.
And the country has created this environment.
Right.
Society has created this environment where we want shit cheap and we want it now.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why there's no middle class anymore.
I always tell people that the problem with a lot of like classism and stuff in America is that we're addicted to the 99-cent sock, man. Like I go to the 99 to the dollar store, man. And you can buy two pair of business socks for 99 cents.
Yep.
That makes no fucking logistical sense if you have to pay somebody a working wage. But if you don't, 99 cents, right? Like everybody wants to go to Walmart and get a pack of, eight pack of socks and it's only $6. And you're like, how the fuck does that make sense? It makes sense if you don't pay the person at the bottom of the chain.
And I worked on the retail side for a few years mm-hmm. and worked with Walmart and saw their business model. And I know a lot of people want to tear down Walmart and I'm not going to say that they're not a burden to the system, mm-hmm. but we forget our own part in this.
Yeah. Going to Walmart and buying them socks.
You want shit that you probably don't need.
Yeah. That's
you
true.
Financially don't need. So you're trying to find it at the, you want that flat screen TV mm-hmm. for $300.
Right.
So you're going to Walmart to buy it and you're yourself probably not making very much money.
Right.
And you are by buying things there, you are contributing to the own oppression of people in your same boat.
Yeah.
And we don't want to take personal responsibility for stuff.
Right.
I shop at Walmart occasionally, and I'll be honest with you, I do it because there's certain things that I can't afford other places.
Right.
And I don't have any kids. So, you know, I should be able to, I guess, to some degree, to be able to afford things.
Well, it's that thing where, like, look at the iPhone, and they're like, well, it's made by little babies whose hands are small enough to put the pieces together in China, and then they throw mm-hmm. the babies out a window or something like that. And we're all like, damn, that sucks. Anyway, I'm about to tweet this shit. Like I remember when Steve Jobs died, because everybody's such hypocrites. Steve Jobs died, and I saw people that were like, fuck Steve Jobs.
They're so ridiculous.
So many people died because of him and the oppression. Sit from my
iPhone iOS.
Yes.
iPhone iOS.
Right. Sit from my iPhone 5. You're like, oh, okay. All right.
And then it's like, oh, you have an Android? Okay. Yeah. let's talk about that shit for a minute. Again, people are going to pick and choose their causes and not realize what they contribute to the system.
Right.
And Walmart used to have everything that was sold in the United States. But you know what? People wanted stuff cheaper.
Right.
You know, I mean, people can talk smack about fast food, but you keep eating it.
Right.
And I don't care what anyone says. It is affordable.
Right.
To take your ass to the grocery store and buy some food and cook it. And how do I know this? Because it's something that I work in every day. And again, with the whole Twitter narrative, is a lot of people talking about shit they know nothing about.
Right.
I grew up poor. My mom and dad fed us on $20 a week.
Right.
For a good portion, the beginning part of my life, I saw the struggle. My mom cooked meals every day.
Right.
There was no, we're going to go take our asses to McDonald's and get us some chicken nuggets because it's a dollar.
That is
a
thing.
Like, fuck that. I'm going
to
cook.
That is a thing that is weird to me because also, you know, we didn't grow up with the most money or whatever. And, you know, my parents eventually kind of like, they came up. Like, you know, they worked hard and they, mm-hmm. you know, they achieved. And that's the same model, that the same work ethic they instilled in me and my brother. But, you know, I remember when we used to live in the projects and shit. It's weird because on Twitter and now with social media, it's a little different. And maybe things have changed that much and I'm just not aware. But the idea of me demanding or even asking for some fucking fast food from my mom is crazy. Like, I can't even imagine, like, you know, any McDonald's and Wendy's and shit I rode past in the backseat looking longingly one day I will be an adult and I'll be able to go in there and I'll be able to buy a dollar cheeseburger, but not that damn day. So like but maybe that's the reality for some people. But now it's like you said, there's such narratives like, you can't discuss the topic at all, or else it, like, it has to fit this narrative of, well, there's food deserts and everybody wants to eat better, but so nobody can afford it.
See, you and I could probably talk for like 3 hours, and that's why you my boo-boo. You better tell your wife, she's like, she, you know, be glad you got that ring on your finger, because I'd be like, I'm coming to get you, baby. I'm coming to get you. But the food desert thing, or the gentrification of food, as we like to call it, people like to bitch about. Here's the thing. I worked here. I saw a situation that was happening here in a part of Fort Worth where there was a huge food desert. Mm-hmm. And Super Target and some other retailers wanted to come into the community, and the community fought it tooth and nail. For what? Many reasons.
Right.
But what did they wind up getting? A Walmart.
Right.
So I don't give a shit that it's a Walmart. I'm happy that these people have a grocery store to go to.
Right.
Right. And that's, it's a double-edged sword here, because you're going to hear people talk about gentrification and food deserts, but then they want to be selective about which retailers are coming in.
Right.
There was a situation that happened, I think, up in Portland in a poorer neighborhood where Trader Joe's wanted to come in. Mm-hmm. And the city was going to give them a certain amount of tax dollars, tax credits to build. So the community was upset because they were like, if you can give them tax credits for this, why can't – I was like, Trader Joe's pays – something upwards to $11, $12 an hour for cashiers and provides health insurance.
Right.
Why wouldn't you? And it's actually affordable, healthy food.
Right.
When I say affordable, it's cheaper than Walmart. That's where I grocery shop at now.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want them to be there? Right. Why wouldn't you want, and I understand there's certain aspects of gentrification that are negative, if you will, but what do you have there before?
Right.
There's bodegas, there's convenience stores, grocery stores are needed.
Right.
And so what's the solution for that?
Right.
That's the question I have for people that complain about a Walmart being built in such places or a certain this and that. Okay, a independently owned grocery store can come in, but it's going to be expensive as hell because they don't have the buying power that a chain does.
Right.
So they're not going to be able to afford to live, you know. And the majority of people that are going to be shopping at said grocery stores are using some sort of food assistance program.
Right.
So all I care about is the bigger point is – providing those tools and teaching these people in the community that you can go to grocery stores, you can buy food, you can cook at home. There are, it's not bougie. Right. It is a sustainable lifestyle to fight so many other issues that poor communities are dealing with.
Yeah. I feel like people, it's so much easier to complain.
Yeah.
Because the solutions are hard, and there are hard choices, and they're not as, it's not as black and white, but as people like to paint it, where, like you said, okay, let's bring in a Whole Foods. Whoa, 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 now you're gentrifying my community. But
yeah.
Before there would have been a McDonald's here, like, and you don't want that either. It's like, well.
And you can't talk about weight issues.
Right.
Because then you're fat
shaming
people,
yeah.
You're doing this. Well, I can tell you with the work that I do that I see the effects of this.
Right.
I see kids that have diabetes at the age of 10.
Right.
Type 2 diabetes. You know how hard it is to get type 2 diabetes?
Mm-hmm.
On the serious tip.
It is. I've been trying to get it for years, and I still can't get it.
I had it for a short time
because
of some endocrine issues, and I was like, hot damn, you know?
Yeah.
But you see this happening to kids, and then what we're having is, like, there's a nationwide initiative called Cooking Matters. And it's with Share Our Strength, and it is what it means. We are having to go into poor communities and talking to people about cooking. Think about that for a minute. Most, if you think about soul food and you think about this and that, shit came from people cooking at home. People don't do that anymore.
Right.
They've been fed this perception that it's expensive to cook at home. No, it's not.
Right.
It really isn't. You're going to fast food places that you're having to spend your money because you can't use your EBT cards there,
yeah.
You know? But the grocery store, you know, I see it all the time when we're training people and telling them, hey, I know your food stamp card can pay for some Doritos, but that shit's like $3. And for $3, you could buy this, this, and this.
Yeah.
I mean, you're –
well, also, you know, here's the biggest part of that people just skip right over. It's cheaper maybe in the short run, the very, very short run. In the long run, it's way more fucking expensive to have healthcare costs related to this. You know, the side effects of eating, you know, shit for your whole life. Like, it costs you some way, you know how they say there's no such thing as a free meal? There's no such thing as a free meal. It's going to cost you at some point if you only eat McDonald's for your whole life. If you don't cook, it is going to cost you. So yeah, people like to throw that out there. But it's kind of like this thing with, the President Obama, right? This is a kind of a black thing, but you'll just follow along with me. He does these speeches sometimes to like graduating black classes at colleges and stuff, right? And the speech will be half pat on the back and then it's half kicking the ass, right? And a lot of people hate the kicking the ass part. Like, they don't mind the, you know, hey, you're black, you overachieved, you're getting out of college, this is great. But then they hate the part where he's like, look, now don't go out here, have children out of wedlock, stay away from crime, go back to communities and help out, blah, blah. People don't like that shit because then it's like, why does he got to talk to black people like that? But to me, I'm like, I've gotten that speech from my father. I've gotten that speech from my uncles. Everybody who's ever cared about me is giving me that speech. Yep. It's not like he just goes in and goes, y'all niggas ain't shit. He always gives them a little bit of like hug and then a little bit of like motivation. And people just hate the tough love aspect of it. Well, that's the thing is like, if you never tell people that, because he's not just speaking at graduating class, he's speaking to everyone who's listening, the speech will be written about. If you don't tell people you can do better and there's no excuse, then you will, like, you are contributing to the idea of, hey man, you don't have to do better. So if you tell people like, oh well, it's not your fault you live in a food desert, or it's not your fault McDonald's is cheaper than buying a salad or something like that, if that's what you're going to tell people all the time, then how are we ever going to have people that do make decisions to change things? Like, you can't make the decision for them. It will be a personal decision where they have to just at some point in time, even if you build a Walmart, you know what's right next to the vegetables section in my Walmart? The fucking fried chicken fingers.
Chicken. Hell yeah, man.
You know what I mean?
Fried chicken is good, yo.
Right. It's a choice at some point.
And you have to identify, like, I'm a middle class person now. Mm-hmm. I work a lot. I volunteer a lot. I have some of the worst eating habits sometimes. Yeah. And it really, you know, I struggle with my weight because I try to find convenience instead of putting in the time and effort it takes to do the right thing.
Right.
So, I mean, but I don't make an excuse. That's
right.
Me trying to find an easy way out. And I have no reason to, you know. I had a trainer for a while who used to send me the meanest text messages about, you know, get your ass up and make yourself some breakfast and you need to do this and you need to do that and stop making excuses. And if we've created a society of everyone deserves a trophy, you know, everyone deserves this, and we set people up for fucking failure.
Right.
Because that's not how the real world is at all.
Exactly. At all.
And, you know, I see it now. I mean, I grew up in a household where my mom cooked every damn day, and I don't cook all the time. You know what I mean? My boyfriend cooks more than I do. You know, I mean, but we fortunately both work from home. But, you know, and people will tell me it's easy for you to say you don't know what it's like to have a family. That's the shit they always like to tell single women who try to, like, help people out. And I was like, well, you find time to go get your nails done. Mm-hmm. You find time to go get your hair done. You find time to go to the movies or do whatever shit that makes you happy.
Right.
You need to find time to make some better choices for your family.
Yeah.
And it's not me trying to tell anyone how to live or how to do this and that, but don't come with some whack ass excuse.
Yeah, you just can't.
It's my thing.
Right. Don't have an excuse. I'd much rather you just be like, hey man,
I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
I like to eat cheeseburgers.
Me too.
I like tacos. You can probably see me all the time, you know, posting pictures of the tacos that I eat.
Like, McDonald's is delicious. Yeah, McDonald's is delicious. I'm like, all right, well, that's true. You know, like, I can understand.
I ain't going to lie. What was it, Saturday? I had spent all day volunteering. Mm. All day. My ass was beat. I went and got a pedicure. I was like, yeah. And then on the way home, I was like, I just texted my man and I was like, I want a quarter pounder with cheese and some French fries. And he was like, word, let's do this. So I got put on a movie and we're eating cheeseburgers, man. And that's just how it is sometimes. So I'm not going to fault anybody for that, but you got to just be honest with yourself. And we are creating these narratives where people can just make up excuses instead of just owning up to shit.
Yeah.
You know, I always like to say, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? What came first, the weight gain or the health issue?
Right.
Because some people like to say that they're overweight because of health issues. Well, what came first?
Right.
You know, mine was my endocrine system that caused issues for me. And it's always a struggle to watch my weight. Right. But I'm not going to use it. I used it as an excuse for a while.
Right.
And I was like, you know what happened when I started living the way I'm supposed to? Guess what? I started to feel better.
Right.
Certain things. So why are we going to discourage people from making better choices that will ultimately help them in the long run?
Yeah.
Instead of just having hard talks with people.
Yeah. There's no need to handicap people, like, from at least being able to achieve. Like, cause, like, that's the other part of this shit where, like I said, I don't want allies because allies typically talk about disenfranchised groups as if they're like children and can't do any better. Like, where, and that's so patronizing to me where it's just like, well, no, it's not your fault. You're black. And you're just like, wait a minute, hold up. I can do this shit. You know? So like there's always,
I'm genetically capable of this as much as you are, as much as they are, as much as anybody is. I mean, You hear it all the time. And again, it's like the same people like, well, your ass is online all day.
Right.
So obviously you got some time to do some shit
right.
if you're online all day. Yeah. Or what kind of job do you have? Because I'm fortunate that I have a job that, I mean, I work for corporate America, but I'm home based. I have more time to do things. But I'm like, I know when I worked in the office, I wouldn't be able to be online this much.
Right.
Like, you know, come on now. American productivity is probably down because of fucking social media. But again, I mean, it just feeds into, again, we don't like to have the conversation that we find the time to do the things that we like.
Yep. Exactly, man. All right. This has been great.
I know.
I've enjoyed it. The time has gone by so fast.
I
looked at the clock. I was like, I've almost taken up 2 hours of your time. Monica.
And you know what? I'll tell you something that'll make you feel bad is that, I just canceled a massage appointment so I could finish talking to you.
Oh, no.
No, it's a good thing. It was a Groupon. It ain't no big deal. They're going to see me later today.
Well, man, look, this has been awesome. You, my boo forever, and I appreciate you taking the time out to discuss all this with me. Follow Monica, at Monica is Liberal on Twitter. Like I said, very interesting person and very funny. And it's not just all political tweets. You got some Lawrence standing up in there. And then you also got a bunch of funny stuff, man. And then, you always seem to come along right when I'm at the moment where I'm starting to give a fuck, you know, about something stupid, like where it's like, man, what the fuck? Like, why would, like, for example, that one time, I made a joke about how I was for breastfeeding and I was like, I was like, I don't mind, breastfeeding, but you know, it's something like with this idea, like a grown man sucking on titty or something. And then this breastfeeding activist was like getting angry at me. And then just like Monica would come along and be like, isn't this crazy? And I'm like, it is crazy. You're right. Why am I responding to this person? Delete, block, mute, bye. Like, so,
move on.
I appreciate you. Know?
You're a good person. And you know what? You talk about, honestly, you are one of the reasons. And I've said this to you before that makes my Twitter experience better because, I like to have fun and like to talk about funny stuff. I also like what you say about we have the same TV watching habits. Mm-hmm. And I'm, by the way, loving that you have called it That Strain.
Yes.
That shit has made me happy because that show is, I'm all about that show.
Yeah. You know what it
FYI.
Is?
FYI.
People are like, Them Thrones caught on, right?
Yes.
And we didn't necessarily get the credit that I think we should deserve for starting that, but whatever. People are like moving on and taking it. And that's the internet. Like, I don't get mad at people.
Yeah.
It happens. Well, now other shows are starting the dat, like, or them or whatever, like, thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's already people doing That Strain, but it didn't get my seal of approval until it took like 3 episodes. And now is That Strain officially now? Cause it's that good.
Yep.
You know what
it's
I mean?
It's that good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
It's like Penny Dreadful. I was like, I knew Rod would like Penny Dreadful cause it is the shit.
So good.
I'm just saying. So, you know, that's the thing is, we are not singular people on Twitter, and I don't think you should, because I think when you become singular, you kind of mess with your experience.
Yeah.
You could learn a lot about a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, comics and movies and books and music.
That's not authentic. Nobody's a singular person. Like, I've never met a person. Well, you know, if I have met that person, we didn't get along. If I ever meet a person that's like, that's cool, but I only want to talk about this. I'm like, you know what? You're boring me. So
I only want to talk about the pink Power Ranger was my favorite Power Ranger. I gotta move on. You know?
So y'all go follow Monica, man, and we'll be back on another Medium Talk, I'm sure soon, with another interesting person, and hopefully you guys learned as much as I did, and if not, you guys at least enjoyed our banter. So talk to you guys later. Peace.